Hey everyone, I want to welcome you to the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. This is your host, Mance Rader. This is episode 116. It's going up on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Evoox, YouTube, on my website, freemanbeyondthewall.com, and it'll be on libertarianinstitute.org/Mance. I want to remind you about my books, The Kids Are Not All Right and Freedom Through Memedom. They're both available on Amazon, but they are also available on my website, freemanbeyondthewall.com/store. And you have your choice of 8 different cryptocurrencies that you can purchase them in. Today, I am welcoming to the show Remso Martinez. Remso used to run the podcast Remso's Republic. He stopped that to write a book called Stay Away from the Libertarians. This is a fun little book that he wrote, and we're going to get into it about some of the funny chapter titles here, and basically, I'm just going to let him talk. He's very educated on libertarianism. He's been active. He's been around the block. This is a fun interview I think you're all going to enjoy. So here's my interview with Remso Martinez. So what's going on tonight, Remso? How are you doing?
Mance, I am doing outstanding. Thank you so much for having me on.
Cool, man. I've been looking forward to talking to you. Anyone who writes a book that has a really has a title that jumps out at me, and then has chapter titles that are equally as interesting, I will say, I want to talk to. So, welcome, and let's just jump right in and talk about this book you wrote. The title is. And I think it's right out of a meme. Stay away from the libertarians.
Yes, sir. Believe it or not, it took me longer to figure out a title for the book than it did to actually write the book. I probably went through about, hundreds and hundreds of title proposals before I actually, threw one up against the wall and was like, you're it. This is it. So I wanted something that really captured the essence of the book. And the whole premise behind Stay Away from the Libertarians is that is the common phrase that I've been told throughout my young adult life, and what many other thousands, hundreds of thousands, I'll even go and say millions of people throughout the last 100 years or so have been told, just stay away from the libertarians. Why? And it's ultimately because of the lies, myths, misconceptions about libertarianism. We don't talk about it in schools. We don't treat it as a relevant political philosophy or worldview. And when people do talk about it, we might as well be talking about the boogeyman hiding under your bed that's going to go ahead and kidnap. Yeah, they paint us as these giant monsters when in fact, we're some of the nicest, friendliest people you could ever imagine. We're not the monster under your bed. We're your neighbor. We're your friends. We're your coworker. Libertarians are just everyday people that have a different perspective on the world, and it's based off one of non-aggression, peace, and prosperity. So the purpose of the book is to really combat the social structures that are saying these libertarians are dangerous and you need to stay away from them at all costs.
Now, are you a more of a minarchist, or do you lean towards anarchism? Where are you at?
I'm at a rather interesting part of my life, because when I was writing the book, I consider myself more of like a Friedman type of guy. But as I was doing a lot more of my research and I was getting a lot more into the weeds of things, I mean, I'm definitely I call myself a minarchist, but I think the goal of libertarianism at the end of the day is to basically make the state so irrelevant it just goes away, because nothing can be enforced. And the only things that are enforced are, private and voluntary contracts. So I do believe that, if man was perfect, we wouldn't have a government. But, I don't argue with the argument that, man is flawed, therefore, why should we have a government? So I think I'm like in a really weird type of Twilight Zone space between the two.
Okay. So, all right, before we start jumping directly into the book, I saw you got someone to write a foreword for you. You also had some quotes here. Jennifer Grossman, the CEO of the Atlas Society, which they put out some good information. How do you know, like Alex Merced and Tim Pruse, how do you know all of them?
Oh, well, didn't you know we're all part of the same secret society?
Ah, that friggin' handshake.
Hey, man, if you know the wink and the nod and the chest bump, you're in. I've been a journalist for several years, and I hosted a podcast called The Remsa Republic. It went on from 2016 until recently. My last episode was actually about 2 weeks ago. I had Congressman Ron Paul on to kind of finish things off in style. And during that time, I did about 130, 140 or so episodes where I got to meet some, you know, incredibly interesting people, people that are, you know, really doing a lot of good in the world, much like how your show does things. And, I mean, it was a blast while, you know, I was going. We were number 25 on iTunes for news and politics at one point. I mean, it was just a lot of fun. And during that time, you know, I got to do the show, but, you know, apart from being a journalist, I've also done a lot of activism. I was a campaign consultant. So I've been around primarily Virginia politics for a while, but if you've lived on the East Coast for, you know, the last couple of years and you've been involved in this liberty circle of, you know, fabulous furry freak brothers, you probably, you know, heard my name or something at some point. Hopefully good things have been said, but, you know, at some point, I think I've been around the block a little bit.
Yeah, you hope good things are said, and you always wonder what's going on behind your back.
You know, people either wave at me with all five fingers or just one. But they're still waving. They're still waving.
I always just assume they're saying I'm number one.
That's a good way to think about it. Always right. Win.
All right, let's get into the heart of the book. The first chapter jumps right out at me. It's pretty funny. It's called Communist High School Musical. What are you conveying? What kind of trouble are you starting in this first chapter?
Well, is it not obvious enough? high school for a lot of people is probably the worst time of your life. And for me, I definitely, you know, when you're walking around with your worn copy of The Fountainhead talking about, you know, egoism, women aren't necessarily throwing their phone numbers at you. So high school was already kind of difficult for me. What made it more difficult was the fact that I was a student right at the very beginning of the Obama era. And what you saw was a giant change in the way that people thought, the role between students and the school should be and how young people should be with this new, progressive government era that we're going to enter. Because, you know, the age of Obama was supposed to go on forever. I mean, his was a mandate from heaven. So, you know, we had to get on the system and we had to learn that, you know, it takes a village to raise a child and, you know, to each their own and to each person's worth is how much they should get and everything else. And so each of their need is how much they should get as well. I mean, it was all of this socialist pinko hippie nonsense. And you mix that in with process philosophy. Process philosophy is a term that describes the coalition between cultural Marxism, environmentalism, and Darwinism. You get that together and what you have is a socially, morally relative, you know, bunch of kids going through puberty, and what they're being told is you can't make it far in life because the odds have already been stacked against you because of either your income or your class or your race or your gender or the way that you woke up this morning feeling. So what you need to do is we need to constantly use the force of government to level the playing fields for everyone. And you could do good in life, but if you do, you have to remember that you didn't do any of that. So what we have is we have one of the most affluent school districts in America. I went through Fairfax County Public Schools, filled with all of these extremely left-wing teachers, basically molding kids in the ways that we've typically seen it done on college campuses. Now, I totally believe that what we're seeing on college campuses is a, you know, it's a massive attack on individualism when it comes to these students coming in. But, you know, most of those kids, they already have an idea of where they see themselves in the world by the time they get to college. What we really never talk about is, you know, essentially the American church, the public school education system. You talk about public schools and you're going to have a whole bunch of weights thrown on your chest like you're in the Salem witch trials. So the first chapter of the book talks a little bit about the encounters I had from freshman through senior year of high school, you know, condensed into maybe less than a dozen pages. But it's basically to get people to understand that this indoctrination starts when you're the moment you really step into the public education system. And for them to say that you, that they don't have an agenda is an outright lie. And the thing is, you know, ultimately politics is a battle of worldviews that are essentially applied through the force and mechanism of violence through coercion that comes about through the state. So the first chapter really tries to paint the picture that, you know, I think people become a libertarian the moment they realize that this just isn't normal. And then the moment they question it, they're smacked down. And that's when they go ahead and they're thinking that Bernie Sanders has a great recipe for governance because they don't want to get smacked again. They don't want to get put in the corner. So the first chapter is all about that. And, you know, it's terrifying when I think about it because I still see it. I don't think things have gotten better in that aspect.
You're speaking my language. I mean, that's what my cultural Marxism, what's going on college campuses and how it's spilling out is the theme of my second book. My first book was just basically my version of Anatomy of the State by Rothbard. I wanted to come out with something like that just to absolutely destroy people's notions of the state as anything other than force. So, yeah, I think we're definitely on the same page there, and it's some dangerous stuff, man. But you're right, and I don't know if I hit enough in the book about this. It is an attack on individualism. It is teaching people how to get into a collective and get into a group.
Yeah, the one thing in the book that I did not mention because I didn't want to go off on too much of a tirade because I have a habit of doing that is I talk about my I think it was my junior year AP history teacher, one of the most strident progressives I've ever met in my life. And one thing he said to me, I mean, I might as well have been tattooed on my back. It just has never left me. And for me to have forgotten to put it in the book, you know, it kind of bugs me still, so I'll bring it up now. But at one point, he was talking to a student about, you know, what should happen if a student goes to the hospital or something stupid, like, you know, where does the liability fall between the school and the parent and stuff like that. And he basically said, well, you see, when you're here from 7 a.m. until 3:15, we are your parents. And if, let's say, we wanted to do something with you that your parents said no to, we have the legal obligation to override your parents' authority. And I'm sitting right next to this conversation, and the first thought going through my head is, what the fuck did he just say? Like, that is that is some ballsy stuff. I know if my mom was in the room, she would have gone, you know, just full New Jersey housewife and flipped the table. Like, what did you say? Did you give birth to him? And all this other stuff. Like, she would have gone crazy. But just sitting to that, you know, sitting right next to that conversation, listening to that happen, I was like, wait a second. Who has the right to make that decision? Who actually ever thought that was a good decision to make? And Do parents really have authority over their children, or is it just pretend? Because, you know, when we think of, like, property itself, why is it we have to pay property taxes on things? Because that's a sign of ownership. So who owns my car? Do I own my car, or does the government own my car? Am I just leasing it from the government? You know, one of the biggest things that bugs me about Fairfax County, where I still currently live, is that we have a dog tax. We have a tax on all animals. It's called the dog tax, but it's on all animals. And basically, if you have an animal that you purchased outside of Fairfax County, you have to pay a tax on that animal. So we bought my Chihuahua Beagle mix from Fort Hood, Texas, and we brought her here. And because of that, we have to pay a tax on the dog. It's like $15. But one time I asked, you know, what if we just chose not to pay for it? Here's what happens if you don't pay for the dog tax for your out-of-state dog. What they'll do is they'll go ahead and have someone come to your house, break down your door, potentially arrest or shoot you, take your dog, put it up for adoption. If it doesn't get adopted within several weeks, and during that time, you cannot go back and get the dog. You forfeited your rights as an owner. If the dog does not get adopted, what they'll do is they'll go ahead and euthanize it. So basically, pay the tax or we'll kill your dog. And it's that type of thing that, you know, it permeates into everything. Who owns me? Who owns you? Who has the authority to decide, you know, what happens to everybody?
Well, that's the whole point of licensing. Is, you know, as people say, how can police just kill your dog? Well, if you have a license, they've taken ownership of it. I mean, you need a license to drive on their roads. They can take it away from you, so it's not your license. What you talked about owning a car, you don't really own a car. I mean, in Georgia, if you get caught speeding enough times, they can take a car away from you. If you own something, people can't take it away from you. A house, you can pay it off, stop paying property tax, they take it away from you. I would even argue that when you're born and your parents sign on the dotted line to register you at the hospital so they can get you a birth certificate, that might be a sign of ownership as well.
Absolutely. And I think I'm a bit of a weird libertarian, because when I started getting a lot of people, they read a book or they saw something from the Ron Paul campaign. And then that's when they were like, oh, all this just makes sense. With me, it kind of developed over a long period of time. I mean, I wasn't much of a Ron Paul guy. When I first saw Ron Paul when I was still in high school, I thought he was a bit of a nut job. Now I basically worship the man in a cult-like fervor. But, I think the seed of dissent started to grow when I was in that situation over and over and over again. And I was like, is this shit normal? Am I the only one questioning this? And don't you dare question, because then there's something wrong with you. Then they go ahead and send you to a counselor. Remso, is everything going good at home? What do your parents talk about? Do we need to send someone over there? You have to be mentally ill if you question it.
Yeah, I know of someone personally in Minnesota who, started questioning the system and went so far as to disconnect his power and run a generator. And, basically his, quote unquote, his house, he decided to disconnect from the grid and in the middle of the city and run on a generator. And they came and kidnapped him one night, and they kept him in a mental hospital for 6 months, pumping him full of drugs.
Yeah, and that's totally normal. Normal.
That's how we get our freedoms, right? That's why we're the freest society in the world, because, we need to be protected from people who, don't want to be a part of the city grid. Obviously a dangerous individual. Obviously a dangerous individual. All right, let's jump on to another chapter here. The economics of Hooters.
Oh, I knew you were gonna jump to that one at some point. That's everyone's favorite chapter.
I've never been to a Hooters except in I can count how many times on like both of our hands. But go ahead.
Have you ever been to a strip club?
Yeah, it's 5 minutes from where I live.
Well, then you've basically been to a raunchier Hooters.
Yeah.
Real fast, you have to go to a Hooters before you die at some point. The wings are awesome. The burgers are good. The women are friendly. It's a good atmosphere. But, I brought up earlier how in high school, guys will be guys and stuff like that. We had a tradition in high school where every Friday of our senior year with my group of friends, 4 or 5 of us, we were all, budding little conservatives trying to find our place in the world. And I was the odd one out, like, maybe the state is a mechanism of violence. Well, we used to have those conversations at the Elysium of Real Thought, Hooters. And Hooters always has a special place in my heart, because each time we went there, something hilarious would happen. It's a wonderful place. And in that chapter, I talk about I was the founder of Marion Military Institute's first libertarian club. It's a 2-year military junior college out in Alabama. And I founded the first libertarian student group there. It was called MMI, Students for Liberty. And at one point me and the 2 other guys in the group, we were able to latch on to a Young Americans for Liberty chapter out of the University of Alabama in Birmingham. And we went to a y'all conference out in Knoxville, Tennessee. And here we are. Let me tell you a little bit about Marion. It was the shittiest place on earth. I'd say that it is still the shittiest place on earth. The local gas station across the street was called the Stop and Stab. The little Dollar General around the street was the, rob and stab. I mean, everywhere you went, you would basically stabbed. It was, you know, not necessarily the friendliest place you want to take grandma. And, you know, the closest Walmart alone was almost an hour away. So here we are. We're at a military school in the middle of nowhere. Obviously, there's not going to be a Hooters anywhere near us. So when we got to Knoxville, we stopped at our roach-infested motel that, you know, the organization was paying for. And across the street is a Hooters. And throughout the entire time we were there, we really just wanted to leave the conference and go hang out at Hooters. Because here we are. We were a whole bunch of military cadets and everything else. We hadn't seen a woman in, like, forever. And to see a Hooters of all places where, you know, they have to pretend to like you at least. It was like, oh, my gosh, just please let me enjoy life for 5 minutes. And that always kind of stuck with me because, you know, I'm not going to lie to people. I've never read Man, Economy, and State because that's like, you know, a big investment of my time. So when it came to a lot of these giant treatises and manifestos on Austrian economics and everything else, I would look at people and I'd be like, okay, you have to bring it down to a public school level for me because I'm remarkably dumber than you are. So when I go ahead and I've done student speaking events and things since, when I go ahead and I talk about free markets, I always try and tie into the concept that, you know, where you have the greatest economic freedom is where you also have the greatest civil liberties. And I don't think there's any better example than Hooters, because here you have beautiful women entering into a voluntary agreement where they can go ahead and wear skimpy clothes and serve people hot wings and beer and burgers and everything else. And it's beautiful. And no one gets abused or anything else. Everyone is there because they want to be there. And here you have something that could only ever exist in a capitalist system. And there's this, I don't know if it's true, but, you know, there's this old adage that gets thrown around every once in a while that countries that have a McDonald's or at least one drive-through McDonald's will not go to war with each other. Well, I take that step further. I say that every country that has a Hooters will not only never go to war with each other, but that country also has a greater understanding of civil liberties than countries that don't. So I think when we go ahead and we break down Austrian economics to the level where your Hooters patron will understand, that's how we'll create more libertarians.
Awesome. Let's go on to the next one that I want to choose because, man, I could, just on the title of this chapter, I could go off for a while. It's the libertarians' fault. So explain to me how it's our fault if we have no power whatsoever. You know, like everybody says, oh, well, show me a libertarian society that worked.
Have you heard of Somalia? Don't you want to break the nap and like throat punch a motherfucker when they say that?
Yeah, I do. I'm pretty close to buying a helicopter, but
well, it you know, it's always easy for people to pick on the kid that can't fight back. And when it comes to libertarians, people love to attack us because we're almost never going to attack back. Or when they do go ahead and yell about the evil of libertarianism, there's almost never anyone out there to yell back because they're, you know, let's be honest, we're a very fringe, you know, small percentage of the population. So when it came to that question of, you know, what are we doing wrong? I mean, ultimately, I've been blamed for everything. I became a self-identified libertarian in around 2013 when I was about to go off to college. And libertarians are blamed for everything from, you know, the drug epidemic to prostitution to human trafficking to gun violence, everything. Wherever there's a bad thing happening anywhere, you know, the answer is always, oh, we need to clamp down on more freedoms for more security and all this other stuff. But that big, big title name, you know, it's the libertarian's fault. You won't hear that anywhere more often than on a campaign trail. Now, when I first started getting involved in politics specifically, I was a member of the Libertarian Party. Recently, I turned into a sellout and became a Republican because I realized that when I show up to chapter meetings, the neocons don't. So I consider that my community service. But anyway, it's this constant thing that whenever there's a libertarian in a race, here's the three phases. The first phase is they ignore you. The second phase is that they say a vote for you is a wasted vote. And then when somebody loses, they say it's your fault. And you get that all the time. It's almost a guarantee. Dollars to donuts. Oh, the libertarians, they're not serious. Why should we include them on the debates? Oh, the libertarians are stealing more than a percent. My gosh, if you vote for them, you're voting for the other guy. You hate America. And then when they lose, they're like, well, if we didn't allow the libertarians in, I would have gone ahead and lost. I mean, I would have gone ahead and won. I wouldn't have lost. And it's this constant, you know, bickering where it's like, why, how is it really our fault? Because, you know, when I use the voting example, it's like, well, why did you deserve our vote? Why? You know, to much of a, you know, to much of the chagrin of a lot of Republicans around here, I'm a split ticket voter. I've only voted Republican twice in my life. Other than that, I always voted either independent or libertarian. But, you know, the biggest thing that they always say is, well, you know, it's a wasted vote. And I'm like, well, I think the only vote that's wasted is the person that you don't believe in. And then what do? They go ahead and they rig the system. They put up these bogus ballot access laws. They bring up, you know, giant cartels like the Commission on Presidential Debates. They deface you. They attack you. They do everything they humanly can to get rid of you short of actual violence. And then when they don't get their way, what do? The one thing they're always good at doing, they bitch and bitch and bitch and bitch and bitch. And, you know, apart from just politics, one story I talk about is when I was driving down to Alabama from North Carolina. We met up with my roommate's family and we were going to bond and all the other stuff. It was a trip from hell. And at one point, my future roommate is driving and his dad is sitting in the front passenger seat. And he turns around and he looks at me as if I'm about to get, you know, shot in the head like that guy in Pulp Fiction. So I was already a little bit intimidated. He had told him that I liked Rand Paul, and you can't like Rand Paul without being, you know, the most hardcore anarchist out there. Am I right? Yeah. Just let that sink in. So anyway, he looks at me and the first thing he asks is like, so do you like crack cocaine? And here I am just sitting there. I was like 17, 18 years old. I was like, no. And he's like, well, you know, libertarians like crack cocaine. And I'm like, well, I don't like crack cocaine, but, and next, you know, before I can even give an answer, he's like, what about prostitutes? Are you into prostitutes? And I'm like, I would never get a prostitute, but, you know, voluntary. And, you know, he just kept cutting me off. And the one thing that really got me was he just kept trying to imply that libertarians were responsible for the social degradation of our society's morals. And then, you know, and he was like literally every Southern stereotype of a backwards right winger you could possibly imagine. The thing that really bugged me was towards the end of that conversation, you know, it went from, you know, we're giving out crack vending machines to daycares and we've got prostitutes everywhere and stuff like that. And, you know, Al Qaeda and the Russians have invaded America because we got rid of the military. You start to see a little bit more of where he's coming from, what he's really afraid of. The last question he asked me was, would you ever date a black girl? And I was like, now remember, I have two parents, each from different places. I have a Korean mother and I have a Puerto Rican father. So I'm not necessarily the whitest picket on the white picket fence. So for him to, you know, say that and say it in a tone that would imply it was a bad thing, that just really kind of hit me. It's like, dude, like, what the fuck is your problem with people doing what they want to do as long as they're not hurting others or taking other people's stuff? And that's the biggest thing. It's not that they fear radical freedom. It's that ultimately it comes down to control. It's not that they want you to be less free. It's just that they don't want you to do things that go against their sense and sensibilities. It's all about control. And then we wonder why they do the things they do when they get someone elected. Or when people like that get elected. You know, I really knock on Rick Santorum throughout the book because you cannot paint a worse politician than him. But, you know, it's one of those situations where it's like, you can't blame me for stuff that I have no control over. And then you really go look at the people and they're not the libertarians you think they are. Half of them aren't even libertarians. And what's funny is, and I do allude to this, I didn't want to hit on the kid too much, but, you know, if you want to talk about a kid that came from a family where this kid was going to grow up and inherit the family business. And he looked like a dude that walked out of like Gone with the Wind, except extra inbred. Like if you wanted to find some hookers on blow, like this guy would probably set you up. And here I am, the guy saying people should have the freedom to do that, but I'm never going to indulge in any of that. It's like, he can't say it's my fault. It's Choir Boy's fault.
That's funny, man. I know it's, and all of those things that they, you know, all of the ills of society, just about all of them can be pointed right back to prohibition. And that's government. Yeah. That's government. The opposite of libertarianism is, you know, government control. And that's, oh, there's a black market for something. Why is there a black market for something? And they just, yeah, it's like talking to air sometimes, especially with conservatives. I have a special, as much as I don't like leftists, conservatives are right there with it. So.
I mean, brother, I'm an equal opportunity hater.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough for me because, I want to like one of them. I wish the left was anti-war so I could have a conversation with one. Yeah, was still anti-war so I could have a conversation with one. I mean, it would be nice, but let's jump on to another chapter. Anyone who would look at this chapter list, this one's going to jump right out at them. So alt-right versus galt. Right. And I assume by Galt Right, you are referring to John Galt.
You are so. Absolutely correct.
That's because I'm a genius.
So. Yeah, absolutely. No one else has gotten that. They're like, what does that mean? And it's like, oh, put the book down. You're not worthy of reading it. I'll still take your money. But, there's this real insidious thing that we are facing right now. And it has only really popped up the last couple of years where now it's the ugly giant racist Klansman elephant in the room. Libertarians are just waiting in the pipeline to join the alt-right. And that is the new leftist buzz phrase. And, I saw this coming for a while. It was, you know, it was kind of nice during the Bush administration because libertarians could get along with the left. And then when Obama was president, they got a little bit along with the right. And now since Trump is president, some libertarians, more the beltway types, were expecting to coalition with the left on some things. But, you know, here's the thing. Progressivism is wholly antithetical to libertarianism, and they were always going to call you something. So what they did was they tried to find every way possible to tie libertarianism with the alt-right. Now, let's go ahead and break it down. Have there been people who have been libertarians who are now part of the alt-right? Of course. Just like there are people who, I don't know, one may have been a Goldwater girl and then become synonymous with Satan. I'm talking about Hillary Clinton. People change, and leftists don't believe that's possible. So because one libertarian became part of the alt-right, of outright racist fascist, we're all one bad day away from becoming Hitler. And it's this real insidious culture that I think we allowed to, permeate within our circles for a while. You know, they were the neo-Confederates. They were the nationalist guys and all this other stuff. Well, you know, we could have your prostitute-ridden, drug-addicted libertarian utopia, but it's just for the white people. And it's like, dude, what the fuck? And we wonder why, you know, they ended up doing the things that they wanted to do. It's because now they've become mainstream. So we had to talk about it. And in that chapter, I talk about, you know, what's actually going on. One, this giant libertarian to alt-right pipeline isn't real. Two, the alt-right is wholly antithetical to libertarianism because one is just entirely based off collectivism. It's almost the most retarded type of collectivism. It's ethno-nationalism. It's ethnocentrism. They're like, oh, well, when all the white people get together, everything will be kumbaya and beautiful. And I'm like, man, put a bunch of white people in a hot elevator and they'll kill each other. Like, no one likes like, I hate everybody. I've given the bird to white people, Asian people, everyone. Like, I'm a bit of a jerk sometimes. So for anyone to say, well, you know, once we go ahead and we get our homogenous society, it's like, that's bullshit. That's never going to happen. So one, it's based off the dumbest of dumb pretenses ever. Whereas libertarianism is all about the individual. And Jennifer Grossman, who's become, you know, I'd like to consider her not only a friend, but a mentor over the years. She came up with the term, you know, somewhat in jest. She was like, you know, we need less of an alt-right. We need more of the galt-right. We need people that focus on the welfare of the individual, which is the largest minority in the world. Because when you go ahead and look out for the individual, you inadvertently go ahead and start looking out for everybody. And that's why the alt-right hates libertarianism. Because we refuse to fall into a collective mindset. So that's the whole gist of that chapter in like a couple minutes. But I mean, it's just, it's one of those things that has become worse and worse and worse and worse. It used to be that, you know, I couldn't get into much of a fight with anybody because they're like, oh, libertarians, you're like half of what I like, half of what I call cancer. But now it's like with the left, they, you're a racist. I've been called a white supremacist. There was a giant smear on me where, you know, a bunch of leftists were calling me a white supremacist. And it's like, guys, I'm not even white on the census. Like, what the hell?
Oh, you don't – in the age of Trump, you don't have to be white to be a white supremacist. You don't have to there's a lot of things you don't – I mean, I put out a meme today – and there's a new Twitter account that will retweet your tweet if they think that it's slightly racist with like a woof. I think it's called Racist Dog or something like that.
What?
And I got one woof, and I was like, and I was proud of it, and I retweeted it, and everybody's like, oh, come on, man, you didn't even get like two or three woofs. You're not trying hard enough. And it was like the and the funniest thing about it was the meme was about how it was Donald Glover, you know, Childish Gambino, that new this what is it, Is This America video that he's become famous for.
That thing is trippy.
It's basically him looking at a looking at the words white people exist, and it has him saying, is this racism? Because you know, just, 'cause white people just exist. And apparently, I guess that's racist, although, you know, basically I was calling, you know, you're calling somebody else out on their racism, but, yeah, whatever. I mean, I guess that's the only way they know how to fight. And the first person who took me to task on it had like this, their profile was, praising Obama, and my response to them was, you're praising a child killer in your profile and you want to ask me about a meme?
Well, I mean, Obama wasn't even the first black president.
Bill Clinton. Yeah. But and someone comes back, well, you know, the president before him and the president after him is killing children. And I'm like, are you expecting me to defend either one of those assholes?
Does that make
too?
It any better?
Yeah. So somehow you're expecting me to defend one of those two?
I'd like my child killer to be extra Caucasian, thank you.
Yeah, it would be, if this person was killing children, I would much prefer that it would be white skin. Thank you.
Just the little things.
Yeah, these people are friggin' retarded.
It's ridiculous because they want you to fall into the left-right spectrum. They always want you to. And it's not even about ideology at that point. It turns more into partisanship, which is almost even worse than that. Because first what we do, and I do cover this in the book, we tell people that you have to be on the left and right and you have to give away either civil liberties or economic freedoms, and each you know, way, whether you go to the far left and end up with communism or go to the far right where you end up with fascism. Either way, the farther you go, you end up on the road to hell. And then what you have to do is you have to end up in the situation that many Republicans are in. It's the rhino syndrome. It's like, oh, we have to primary these rhinos and I'm never this guy or never her. And then once that guy ends up winning the primary again, it's like, well, who cares if they vote like a Democrat? Would you rather have an actual Democrat? I'm like, that is stupid. Like, do you listen to yourself? Stupid. Like, seriously. And, I mean, it's like, who's winning at the end of the day? Like, who's really winning? It's the status. It's all about statism.
If you went, I don't know if you spent any time on Twitter.
Too much.
If you spend as much time on Twitter as I do, you have to, if somebody from the outside just came in on Twitter and just started surfing, you know, someone who wasn't particularly political, you would think that either the country is being completely run by racists who want to open up put people in camps, or it's being totally run by communists who want to put people in gulags. It's probably somewhere in between. But
you have to give them your guns still.
Either way, you're gonna have to give up your guns. So, I have time for one more here, and this would probably be my wife's favorite, because when she heard this phrase, she was like, "Why can't we have that now?" And it's taco trucks on every corner.
Doesn't that just make you salivate after you say it?
It's like that's the dream, man.
It's
the dream.
So one thing I try and emphasize is that, and I try and, you know, kind of flavor this throughout the book, this is not a libertarian manifesto. This is not the one end all be all book on everything that you need to know what the perfect libertarian is, because I'm not. I don't think anyone really has the answer. I think the most perfect libertarian out there is Murray Rothbard, but he's dead and I don't even agree with all the things he says. And what I try and emphasize to people is, you know, it's okay to go ahead and have your own opinions, even when they go ahead and they don't match up with your entire orthodoxy, because what is that? That's mental and psychological and spiritual collectivism. And in that chapter, I talk about immigration. I talk about, you know, why we look at it from the wrong point of view, because, you know, I come from the stance that you cannot have a country without borders. And because I'm still a little bit of a statist shill, I do believe that one of the only functions of government is to protect the people, and that means having a border and enforcing it. With that said, I don't believe that, you know, we need to go ahead and ban entire blocks of people. I don't think that we need to go ahead and have a giant test for who can come in. My thing is, if you're going to come here, you're on your own. Eliminate the welfare state and go about and, you know, live your life. Because what we do is we paint immigrants, we paint anyone that's, you know, comes from outside of our borders as monsters or something else. And what we really need to do is we need to go ahead and see them as people. It's just the most basic thing, because what we try and fear isn't necessarily that they're always taking our jobs or what have you, but it's this idea that they're coming here and they're going to go ahead and just eliminate your entire way of life. If you have something that they want, they're probably going to try and take it from you. But there's a reason why they want it in the first place. I think the thing we forget about America is that America is a beautiful country, because we are allowed, you know, when we, you know, we live in a statist environment, but, you know, we're not North Korea by any way, shape or form. But we could still go about our lives and, you know, you can live your day to day life. And ultimately, you know, when you look out your window, when you stay off the internet, when you just walk around, people generally get along. You know, we beat segregation, we beat slavery, we beat Jim Crow, we beat, you know, the bill that we're going up against women's rights. We've done so much as a society that we often forget about that, and then we revert back to primalist nature. And, you know, my biggest thing, and I grew up in a border town originally in Arizona. Like, you could, you know, spit outside my front porch and, you know, stop listening to what the fear mongers and all these other morons have to say. And let's really look at our own bubble. Let's look at our own life. People want to get along because it makes them feel good. That's what Adam Smith brought up in Theory of Moral Sentiments. People will do things not to advance themselves or to benefit directly, but they do certain things because they just want to feel good about themselves. They want to feel lovely. And when we just go back to basic human nature, if you are good to people, more likely than not, they'll be good back. That doesn't mean you become a pushover, but that just means you promote a good environment of peace, prosperity, and voluntarism. And cool, man. Once you do that, it eliminates everything.
Cool. Great message there, man. I know you were telling me, we were talking before we started recording, that you can actually buy your book using cryptocurrency. So, tell everybody where we can get your book.
Totally. So go ahead. Right now, the book is coming out on Amazon in both print and Kindle on June 23rd. So you go ahead and go to Amazon on June 23rd and get the print copy or the Kindle version. But if you want to go ahead and feel extra special and get an autographed copy and, you know, help me not be homeless, you can go ahead and get it on my website right now. Pre-order a special autographed copy at RW, so just R as in Remso, W as in whiskey, martinez.com. So rwmartinez.com, you'll go ahead and see the books tab right there, and then you'll see all the options. We take every crypto imaginable because that's how fun things happen. We take Steam if you're on Steam. And hey, if you like your dollars, I'll even take some PayPal. But you just go to rwmartinez.com and you'll see the books tab and we'll take care of it from there. Everything else will be on Amazon on June 23rd.
Anything else you got to plug?
Check me on Twitter and fight me, Remso101.
Well, man, I've really enjoyed this, and I want to have you back on sometime when after the book comes out, and you know, after we see the reception, and we can talk more about it. And
after all the scandals, right?
Yeah. And you know, or just to come back on and talk about current events or whatever. This was a great conversation, and when you told me that you previously had a podcast with over 100 episodes, I'm like, yeah, this guy probably knows what he's doing. So I think this is going to be pretty easy.
A thing here and there, every once in a while, I say a good idea. But I appreciate it. I'd be honored to come back on. Had a lot of fun, man.
All right, man. Well, you have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you soon.
You too, sir. Take care. Bye.
I want to thank you for tuning in to the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. I want to thank Remso for coming on. I want to remind you that my books are available for purchase on my website, freemanbeyondthewall.com/store, in 8 different cryptocurrencies. And I'll be back on the weekend with another podcast. So take care, have a great week, and bye.